Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and we have a duo of Paradigm Shifters tonight. Let's see, you've been working at shifting the paradigms of relationship, of understanding each other, and also of the process of dying since 1964, although the dying process is about the dying of your mother in a celebrative fashion with you all being there. Now, that's a long preamble. Welcome, Barry and Joyce Vassell, well-known for relationship counseling, the shared heart, and now A Mother's Final Gift, How One Woman's Courageous Dying Transformed Her Family. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Veronica.
Thank you, Veronica.
That was a big preamble. I was trying to suture in a lot of your relationship material, but this book, which I found... It was almost like wearing it because you were really in the relationship with your mother as she passed. It's a really, really wonderful book. Tell everybody how it started, Joyce, how the whole idea of doing this book or helping your mother this way as she passed started.
Well, it started really a long time ago when I was 27 years old, and my mother, we had moved to California, and my mother lived in Buffalo, New York, mm-hmm. and she came for a visit, and on the second day of her visit, she sat me down, and she said, I want to talk about something that's very important to me, and she said, when it's my time to die, I want you to be excited for me, because I feel that death will be my greatest adventure. And my mother was in her 50s. She was very active and very healthy, and it was such a shock for me. I really didn't know how to respond. And the only thing
did you try to push it away?
Well, no, I couldn't really push it away, because she was very intent in what she was saying. And the only thing I remember saying is that it would be impossible for me to ever be excited for her to die. Mm-hmm. And her response, she was very peaceful about this, and she said, this is so important to me that I know you will find a way. And I would think about it from time to time throughout the years, and so I had 40 more years, almost, with my mom.
Which was good, hey?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe 35 more years. And whenever I would think about it, it would always be the same thought, like, that's impossible. No one can ever be excited for their mother to die. But when she was 90 and she was, in fact, dying, it became possible, because she wanted that so much. She wanted us to really celebrate her, what she felt was her greatest journey, the passage from this life into her next life. And throughout her dying process, which was so beautiful, she kept saying to me, please tell everyone that death can be so beautiful. We don't have to be afraid. It's really such a beautiful adventure. So when she passed, 2 days later, I just started writing. It's like I couldn't help myself. And probably within 3 months of her passing, I pretty much had Barry and I, pretty much had the book written.
It's a very intriguing book. So it occurs to me that your relationship with your mother must have been, maybe this isn't true, but you must have had a very good relationship with your mother when you were young, did you?
Yes. I mean, it wasn't perfect. You know, there were definitely, for one thing, my mother didn't really want me to marry Barry.
Oh.
So that was a really big conflict.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to share about that, Harry?
Well, you know, Joyce grew up in a very traditionally Christian family. I grew up in a traditionally Jewish family.
Great.
And, you know, her mom, she liked me, but, you know, it was, he's Jewish. Don't do it. So that took a while, you know, and she and I had, you know, to work through a lot in the early years.
Well, was she very religious?
Yes, she was. Hmm.
She was religious, but also religious in a very open sense.
Hmm.
She went to church regularly,
mm-hmm.
but she also honored, you know, the Jewish faith and other faiths, other people's feelings. She just didn't want me to marry someone that was Jewish.
But in the end, she grew to love me, and I grew to love her, and it was an honor for me to help take care of her and to just be present with her when she was dying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in many ways, she was an ordinary woman. She wasn't, you know, this advanced soul, really. I mean, she is, we all are. But in many ways, she had lots of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one regard, when it came to her dying, she really looked forward to it the way somebody looks forward to the most special cruise or vacation, or just to enter the room. She lived right next door to us, above our garage. Just to walk in the room was to walk into a holy atmosphere for me, and it was so amazing to be with her in those last months and weeks.
So when she was little, her mother died, didn't she?
Yes.
And it's interesting to me that instead of developing a fear of death, she was pretty pleased about it, or pretty excited about it, even years ago, wasn't she?
She was. My mother's parents were very poor. They came from Sweden,
mm-hmm.
and her father was a coal miner in Pennsylvania, and his wife, my mother's mother, died in childbirth, giving birth to the eighth child.
Oh, my.
And my mother was only six. And she, 2 days before her mother died, she was with her mother, and her mother must have sensed something. And she put her hand on my mother's head, and she said, "No matter what happens, I will always be with you,
oh.
and I will always be loving you." And it my mother took that so deeply that even though her mother was no longer there physically, her mother from some place was still loving her. And that became really like a foundation for her life.
Hmm.
That love goes on, that death is not the end of love.
So she probably experienced in a spiritual fashion, didn't she?
She did. She mm-hmm. always felt really, really close to her mother.
Hmm. That's actually a really amazing thing. I remember years ago, I had a husband who was dying. I was in my early 30s, and we went to Maui to give him a few weeks over there, and things got very bad for him. But I met a doctor, and he was an amazing man who had moved to Maui from New York. And his reasoning was that in New York, people fought death, and in the medical system, everybody fought death. But he came to Maui because they prepared for death like a celebration, like a wedding. And he
you know,
that's
more,
really beautiful.
More and more, that's going to be happening. You know, we see, you know, we're part of the baby boomers, and we see more and more people taking care of their parents, and the process is becoming more conscious, more loving. That's part of why we wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to get this message out that this can be a really transforming experience, not just for the person who's dying or the person who's taking care of that person, but in our case, our whole family, even our children, had tremendous growth and awakening as a result of taking care of Louise.
How did your children respond? Was there ever oh gosh, Mom, I don't think I can do this, you know? Was there ever any of that?
Of course there was. There was that for all of us, you mm-hmm. know, and because there was five of us mm-hmm. and the hospice, we just took turns, and if one of us was really having a hard time, they just wouldn't be with my mom that day. But that didn't happen that often, because my mother was so excited.
And good for her.
She didn't want to take drugs, and so that was up until the last 3 days of her life. She didn't take any drugs, and she was very, very clear, and she was able to see where she was going, and then able to communicate to us.
What was she suffering from?
My mom just died of old age. You know, her,
truly.
The whole body was just
coming apart.
Out. She had heart disease, and then her skin started breaking down. Her digestive system, she just kept losing weight. And so I think her whole body was just, Barry describes it like an old clock, just winding down.
With no specific disease, you know?
Isn't really that interesting, hey?
Just the body coming to a close.
So no really specific intense pains or anything?
She definitely was in pain.
Yeah.
Oh, she was?
Yeah.
But she didn't want to over-medicate, because she realized right away that if she took too much pain medicine, it was kind of blocking the spiritual experience. So she made a really amazing decision. She stopped taking all of her medicines. She stopped she stopped eating. And in that fasting condition, it helped her too.
I gather that you go into euphoria when you start that fasting part.
Well, yes. And plus she was seeing towards the last week, she was seeing like her husband who died 8 years before her. And he came to her, and her sisters and brothers and her parents, angels she was seeing. She was seeing incredible beings and describing them. And it's, you know, that's so we had to every day take notes of what was happening, and so that could be part of the book.
It's a very interesting book. Tell me, some of the emotional stuff that I'm asking you is because it isn't really in the book, right? Of how perhaps the children had some, or your kids had some resistance or some fear of it, or had to walk through some of their own changes. You know, you didn't talk about that too much.
It really was so minimal that that's why we didn't put it in. They actually really enjoyed it. Even our son, who was 17 at the time, he was a senior in high school.
Yeah, the stories about him were really impressive because he's a teenager. That's pretty amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course,
right.
He had his boundaries. He said at one point, "I'll do everything except change diapers."
Oh.
Right.
I don't do diapers.
And he took her to her church every Sunday, but he didn't want to stay.
Okay.
And so that was his boundary. Also, he'd go to a coffee shop and, you know, go on the internet or meet with some of his friends. And then when church was over, he'd go and pick her up again. But they all really, really enjoyed it.
Wow.
It was such a, because it was so inspiring to be with her.
And very transformative in terms of, it's like world travel in a way, isn't it?
Yes.
It really expands your belief.
And so many people, especially elderly people, are so afraid that they'll be a burden to their family. And that's another reason that we wanted to write the book, is to show people that with the right attitude, the dying experience can actually be a tremendous gift that will that will stay with their children and grandchildren probably for the rest of their lives.
How did she respond when her husband died? He died suddenly, didn't he?
He did. Actually, Barry and I and our son were coming back from a trip in Canada, mm-hmm. so we weren't there. But our two daughters were there, and they were 18 and 23.
Mm-hmm.
And they happened to be together, and my mother called them, and they came right away and started doing CPR.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was rushed to the hospital by an ambulance, and by the time my mother and our daughters got there, he had died.
Mm.
And they set up a special room in the hospital for the three of them. And I happened to meet a nurse who was taking care of them at the time. And she said it was so beautiful because my mother really wanted our daughters to know that death can be so beautiful and that we shouldn't just go into sadness. We should also go into happiness for the person that died. And she had our daughter's stroke my father's face and his arms and just talked to him in a really loving way. And my mother and my father had prepared for this moment for probably 10 years.
Even your father, eh?
Yes. Mm-hmm. My father was not such a spiritual person. He was an engineer, and he read math and engineering books. That was his enjoyment, mm-hmm. reading that kind of material. And they decided, since a lot of their friends had died in the middle of the night, and then the partner would wake up and their husband or wife would be dead,
mm-hmm.
they decided that since they both had heart disease, that every night when they went to sleep, they would take a few minutes and just thank each other for the good life that they had had together,
mm-hmm.
and in essence, to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they woke up in the morning, it was like a gift. They were given another gift. And so for those 10 years, they had prepared themselves emotionally for that very moment when one of them would suddenly be gone, and they didn't know which one it would be.
Well,
isn't that beautiful?
That is really wonderful.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's because of. Let me see. This is a funny question. You two are amazing with relationships of all kinds, and I wondered if that came down the pike, for example, from your mom and dad. You know what I mean? Is like. Is this available for everyone? Does it have a lot to do with how you approach relationships?
You know,
maybe that's a tricky question,
no,
isn't it?
No, I would say that it wasn't so much, this was not something that we were given from our parents. You know, our work with relationships started 46 years ago when we met and fell in love and had to go through so many challenges, including the different religions and everybody saying we shouldn't be together, and kind of like a Romeo-Juliet thing. And what we decided was that really we dedicated our lives to not just our own relationship and making it the best, because we looked around, we saw people excited about love, and then a couple of years later, nothing.
Mm.
And we said, you know, there's got to be a way. If we make our relationship a priority, and you know that, and really do the work on ourselves and with each other, why not stay in love every day,
consciously,
and for our whole life? And mm-hmm. so it's 46 years later. And that's what we're doing, and of course, along the way, it's also our work with others,
mm-hmm.
helping thousands of people with our books and with our workshops and counseling. But it's a commitment that we developed, and we realized it's possible to stay in love. It's possible.
Well, it seems
and can
to...
Can I also, for the readers who are, for the listeners who are tuning in and don't know who we are, it's Barry and Joyce Vassell, and there's a lot more information on our website, which is sharedheart.org. So, and a lot more information on the book, too, A Mother's Final Gift.
There's a lot on your website. It's a very rich place. Thank you for all of that. I was just thinking how your approach, or all of ours, this is something I really learned about when I was reading the book, is your approach to relationship is so crucial for this kind of service, helping somebody die. Because, you know, I'm so conscious that if people die with a lot of angst between them or anger and so on, that it just goes on and on, doesn't it? You know,
it's a lot harder to heal.
There's so much that you did which required really a deep focus on your interaction and your relationship with her. That's how it seemed to me. Would you agree with that?
And you know what? I want to answer a question you asked before. It wasn't easy to make the choice to keep Louise in her home and for us all to take turns and pitch in to do all the work. We were criticized by many friends who said, you know, that's what nursing homes are for. They'll do all the work. They'll take care of her. And, you know, it's messy. It's inconvenient. It's time-consuming. But we realized that's what it takes to have relationship. Because relationship is sometimes messy.
Yes, and time-consuming.
And time-consuming. and so this was just part of it. It enriched every part of our life.
But it was an exploration, wasn't it? It was like a learning curve, wasn't it?
It was. For our older daughter had just gotten her PhD in psychology.
Hmm.
And she was starting to gather all of her, the hours and all that she's, and all that she needed to get her license.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother went into her dying process, which lasted about 9 months.
Okay.
And Rami, our daughter, decided that she was, for the most part, she continued to work, but not as much.
Hmm.
But all the other parts of getting her license together, she decided she would just put that on hold and just really concentrate on my mother.
Hmm.
And she for 5 or 6 mornings every week, she was the one that got her up and gave her a shower, cleaned her up, got her dressed, gave her her breakfast, and started her day. And her friends and her colleagues criticized her severely.
Wow.
That she was just putting her career on hold to do something that was so seemingly unimportant, that people in a nursing home without any education could easily do for my mom. And our daughter felt that this, what she was doing for her grandmother, was easily as much of an education, if maybe not more, than what she had been learning in school.
Hmm.
For her, it was like her second PhD.
Wow.
Yeah, and...
Is she working in hospice now?
I mean, Barry and I had to give up. We all had to give up things.
Mm-hmm.
Even our son. Our son didn't give up that much, but he had to give up a little bit. And so there were sacrifices that were made, but none of us have any regrets with regards to my mother. We all feel that we did the very best that we could do.
Hmm.
And so the grieving process when she died is very, very different, because there's no feeling like, oh, if only I would have done this,
mm-hmm.
and those kind of regrets, because we, all five of us, felt we really loved fully,
mm-hmm.
and we really served her and helped to fulfill her final wishes.
And did each of you have a very special relationship with her?
We did. My parents, 15 years before my mom died, moved from the East Coast right next door to us,
mm-hmm.
in a little apartment. And then after my dad died, we needed to spend much more time with my mother. And so, yes, we each had a very special relationship with her.
Mm-hmm. I like the story of your young son going over. Didn't he have breakfast with her every Saturday morning or something?
Yes.
But that's really special for a teenager, because to me there was something very healing in the bonding of all the different ages of all of you with this older person. So often we're segregated, aren't we?
Yes.
Like, put them in a nursing home and don't make it inconvenient. And with the biggest advantage is community, I believe.
You know, and the I mentioned in the book that, you know, in third world countries or in indigenous cultures, this doesn't happen. You know, the old are not separated from the young, mm-hmm. and the dying are not taken out of the home. It's part of the whole process of life, and it's so much more integrative.
Well, it sort of makes sense, because we all die. That's something we have in common. Every now and then I'll say that in a room, is that none of us gets out of this alive, and always somebody goes,
right.
And I'm going, boy, are we ever losing touch with the reality of it all. But it was very courageous of you all, very courageous to, in spite of the criticism, to carry on, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, already, I mean, the book has only been out since April, but already... it's like a wave of keeping people at home to die, which is such a beautiful thing. And, you know, hospice makes it all so much more doable.
Mm-hmm.
So people need to know about that. Most people think you call hospice when the person looks like they're going to take their last breath.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, hospice will be involved... even if the person's losing weight, you know, so it could be months out, and they do so much, and so much is covered by Medicare. It's really a blessing.
And what can you expect with hospice? So you do have to pay a certain amount, eh?
Well, no, it's actually all covered by the insurance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if a person is on Medicare, it's 100% covered.
Wow.
And with hospice, there's a nurse that mm-hmm. comes once a week. And if you're having any problems, the nurse will come any time of the day or night, a nurse that's on call.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a social worker, and there's each patient gets an aide that will come and help with showers and different things like that. And then there's volunteers that come. And if the person wants it, there's a chaplain that will come. So it's just, it's an amazing, wonderful service.
Yeah, so part of the book is actually educating people about all the help that's available in the dying process.
I think it's something we really need to learn about or volunteer about. I see that you give some of the proceeds of the book to hospice as well.
We love that organization now.
So, and I wanted to know this. This is going to sound funny. I wanted to know where you people felt discomfort or disquiet or questioning yourselves and so on. And were you exhausted at the end?
Well,
we need to know. Don't we need to know those things?
Yeah,
yes.
Of course.
The hardest part for me, because even though, I mean, Barry was very, very supportive of me, but the bulk of the responsibility, because it is my mother,
right.
was on me.
Of course.
And until we got hospice, it was very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was carrying a heavy weight
mm-hmm.
every day. And I would challenge myself to go through a day without crying. because it just seemed like so much. And then,
but it wasn't a grief cry. It was exhaustion or the weight.
It was very, very, tired.
Mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Trying to keep it all together for my mother. And our neighbor, who had been a hospice nurse, kept encouraging me to call. And it felt so strange because I didn't know that maybe my mother would live several more years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she lived 4 more months after I called hospice. But I didn't know. I thought, and so I felt like if I call hospice, I'll give her the message that, you know, all those feelings go through. But she kept encouraging me so much that finally I did. And the very next day, a nurse came to talk just to my mother. And at the end of that talk, my mother said to me, "This is the most wonderful thing. This is the help that we've all been needing." And from that point on, it felt like I was trying to carry this heavy table,
mm-hmm.
and the hospice people came with all these many legs to support the same table.
Wonderful.
And then all I had to do, all the rest of us had to do, was just focus on really just loving her and enjoying being with her, taking her places. And it, from that point on, it became so much better.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's good to know, isn't it?
It is.
There's also, energetically, there is kind of a weight when you're with a lot of older people that are in some phase of the process of dying. You can feel a weight, and I often kind of liken it to when, you know, when people get to be a dead weight, I feel it's like they're releasing their buoyancy on the planet or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's just been my experience as
that wasn't really the case.
Okay.
Because my mother was so excited about all these things. It was like she had planned for her whole life to go on her dream cruise, and finally it was happening.
Wow.
And she was, and every day she would tell us stories of the different angels that she was seeing, the music that she was hearing, conversations that she was having with my dad.
Hmm.
There was a reunion that she had with her parents and her 7 siblings that had all passed. And
she was the last of her siblings, the last of her family?
She was.
Oh,
she
my.
Was the last of her siblings and all of her friends.
Wow.
Can I share a little story that it's a really precious story of something that happened in her first visit with her husband. When her husband first came to her and she could see him,
mm-hmm.
because I'm telling the story because part of the book is, it's about the incredible beings who are still present in our lives, who've passed on.
Mm.
And when she saw her husband, I mean, she just was so happy. And she told him he looked so good. I mean, of course, you know, Joyce was recording all this, but she was only hearing one side of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, evidently, Hank, her husband, asked her how she was really doing or what she was... He asked her a question because she answered, "There is something that's really bothering me or still weighing on me."
Mm-hmm.
"Why did Joyce take away my driver's license? I was such a good driver." And, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
And I love that part of the book, so please continue.
Okay.
Yes.
So, just to give some background, she was a good driver up until a certain point, and then she was no longer a good driver. A policewoman came to the house, told Joyce, "If you don't take away her driver's license, I will." And Joyce had no choice, so she took away the driver's license and explained it. Her mother couldn't really accept it.
Hmm.
And many older people, you know, it's like their symbol of independence.
And power, heavens.
And power, yeah. And so even though I explained it, and her son, Joyce's brother, explained it, Louise's minister explained it, she could still not really get it. But so we sat there, or Joyce sat there, listening and waiting, and there was a long silence as evidently Hank explained to his wife what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then she spoke to him, and she said, "Now I understand."
Oh.
She said, "I owe an apology to Joyce, don't I?"
Oh.
And then after he left her, she turned to Joyce and said, "I'm so sorry. I've been blaming you, and Hank really got through. Like nobody else could."
Hmm.
It had to come from her husband from the other side to really explain things to her.
That's really a precious story, isn't it?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
was she like as a woman? I mean, was she ever, was she ever fierce? Was her personality different during this phase of her life by a long shot, or was it just continuous? You know, was she always fairly rejoicing and easy? And
She was. My mother loved people.
Mm-hmm.
So much. She's easily the friendliest person I've ever met in my life.
Wow. Good
and
for
she
her.
Felt that every opportunity in life was an opportunity to make a new friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter who the people were. She made friends. Some of the people she loved the most were homeless people that she would her church every week fed these homeless men.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother would bring food, and rather than just bringing the food and leaving, which most of the other women would do, she brought the food and then she sat down and talked to them.
Hmm.
And really made friends with them and tried to find out about their lives.
Hmm.
And if there was any way that she could help them. And that's, you know, she went to the supermarket, she would talk to the cashiers, and she just loved people so deeply, and I think that brought her so much joy in her life. Is this love of people, and she never accepted that she was a shut-in, that she was a person who, that's the term they use in churches, someone who can no longer go to church, who can no longer really get out. She never ever accepted that she was one of those people.
Hmm.
And probably up until maybe 3 weeks before she died, she was still writing little notes to people who were shut in, encouraging them in their lives.
Wow, being really supportive.
And she was very simple.
Hmm.
My mother never had the opportunity to get very much education. She worked as a church secretary. She was just a very, very simple person.
Hmm.
And she was not a saint. She was not an enlightened being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, people, if you read the book, you can understand that she's also an ordinary woman.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, she had her ups and downs. She had a hard, like Joyce said, she had a hard time initially with me being in the family.
Mm-hmm.
As a Jew. She also had a hard time when we wrote our first book, The Shared Heart.
Hmm.
When she read that first book, because we write very, very personally, and she learned, for example, about an affair I had through reading our first book. And, you know, it was so shocking to her that she was embarrassed.
Oh, my.
You know, even though, you know, we talked about the affair that happened and how much growth we got as a result, it was just too embarrassing to her.
Mm.
So she, you know, she had her ordinariness. But when it came to her dying, she shone like a bright light.
Well, it's interesting because, as I mentioned, my father and others that I know, he's 90, and he is also passing, although I don't know, he seems to be in a little bit of recovery right now. But what's interesting is I've seen this in a number of people where they just suddenly, he wasn't as comfortable with just loving people as she is, but he was suddenly open up and become really illuminated, as if all of a sudden he gets it. He gets that everything is a flow of love instead of all these details and so on. And then it closes. And sometimes he's very, very psychic. And I am a psychic, and he wasn't always crazy about that. But all of a sudden, he'll say things about people where he's getting these like really amazing perceptions. So when I was reading the book, I went in and I was talking to him in one of his more normal times. And I said, I was just learning that being intuitive or awakening to much more perception about people is pretty normal in this process of aging and perhaps not living, you know. He was quite strengthened by that, so thank you for that.
Of course, as you're getting ready to let go of the body, the veil between the two worlds gets thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, people who had no previous psychic ability or intuitive or clairvoyant or whatever, it opens up in the dying process.
But I think that's a wonderful thing to tout for people, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. It is. I also noticed with my dad, never expressed very much emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of his life, if something was really beautiful to him, he would just let the tears flow.
Ah.
And I had never seen my dad cry until maybe the last year of his life.
Wow.
So I think that also happens. The emotions just start flowing really freely.
And I notice with my dad that's happening as well. Plus he's awakening to things he had suppressed when he was young. So he's coming up with all these little stories with the emotions. So I think it's a preparation, don't you?
Oh, that's so beautiful with your father.
So do you know what we're all doing here in this interview?
What?
We're getting rid of the syndrome called DOD, denial of death.
That's perfect.
It's such a widespread syndrome. People are in so much denial. Like you said before, we're all going to die, you know. It's shocking to people to even think about it, you know, because we're in such deep denial. But in fact, to realize the incredible journey and the beautiful process and how it's just part of life.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing that shows in this book so clearly is that there is an empowerment in that process, where we think, oh, we've lost all the power, we've lost this and that, but there's an empowerment of her rapport with her spirit self that will go on.
Exactly.
Right?
As her body got weaker and weaker, her soul came through stronger and stronger, and we felt the power of her love. Even just sitting in the room with her, looking into her eyes had so much power, depth, and steadiness and clarity, it would blow me away.
Wow.
And it would be like a mirror reflection of my own lack of peace. And so I would sit there and look into her eyes, and I would have to do a lot of work to breathe, to quiet, to enter into the same power that she had. Even though she couldn't move her body.
What a gift that is, eh?
Yep.
So it's like we need to be, and the other thing we're talking about today is how to empower yourself as you leave, right?
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, for my mom, she started this process, you know, so many years before she died, this process of having a really good attitude, a really good positive attitude, so that when the inconveniences came, like she had to wear those adult diapers,
Yeah.
Which is a horrifying experience.
Yes, it is.
You know, I'm just, I think of myself. I mean, we're, you know, if any of us have to do, no one wants to do that.
Right.
And so that was, that, but that was an inconvenience. And she decided that none of these inconveniences were going to stand in the way of her having a very beautiful experience.
Wow.
So she always kept her heart and her mind on that goal that dying is a beautiful experience. And because she had that attitude so strongly within herself, it was indeed a very, very beautiful experience for her and a gift.
Well, she was dropping off the physical, but she was really focusing in inwardly, right?
Right, right.
So what do you recommend for people? Are you people working with people who are dying now, or is, you know...
We work with everybody.
Yes, yeah, and I'm imagining that will be perhaps more and more of our work.
I just think it's so important. I just keep feeling like we need to... Maybe some people can't celebrate it, but you already spoke about... well, we'll get back into relationship, but you spoke about her choosing her attitude and really having a relationship with her own spirit self. I think that's pretty important stuff to teach, eh?
Yes, yes. And another thing that was so beautiful is my mother, she wrote everything out. She made her wishes very clear. She didn't want to die in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want any life support procedures done on her body. And 10 years before she died, she sent my brother and I a letter, and everything was clear, so that there there wasn't any guessing. And my brother and I are very different people. We approach things in a very different way. And so because my mom was so clear, there were no arguments back and forth about what we thought should happen, because she made her wishes so clear. And that also was a tremendous gift for us. And I think, really, I think every parent should do that for their children.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard lots of feedback on that? Or I want to say this. In relationship, in a marriage or in a love relationship of any kind, it is kind of true there too, isn't it? That you need to be clear,
yes,
about what your wishes are. And do you have a little bit you can say about that?
Right. It's like husbands and wives wanting the other person to know what they want without telling them.
Right.
It doesn't work.
We do a lot of that, I think.
I mean, sometimes it is wonderful, and we are intuitive and psychic, but we need to make our wishes really clear with those we love, whether it's our partner or those who are taking care of us, our family.
Because I thought her story is like a breath of fresh air, even though it is about dying, right?
Exactly. And some of the reviews that we're getting are just that this is, you know, the background is a story about dying, but the foreground is really, it's a book about living and how to live abundantly.
And it's about loving.
And with love.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really, it should be a little bit of a textbook for people, because you take them into the experience so well.
Oh, thank you very much.
And it's exciting to us that's what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
People are using it that way. And hospice is now recommending it. It's becoming required reading.
Oh, this is great. Oh, I'll be tossing it around to a bunch of people as well.
Oh, thank you.
But
we've also had people buy the book for their children, and they wrote a little note in the book and said, "This is what I want too. I want to die consciously," because you need your children there to help with that process.
But you know what, Joyce, I'm thinking that there needs to be the tuning of the family before it gets so close to that, don't you think?
Yes.
because there's a lot of people that I know that are going to reel back and go, I could never do that. You know,
it's so important. And so many, we did devote part of the book to this also, that so many people feel that, when their parent dies, you know, of course, all the children are going to come together in a beautiful way. But in all truth, it's about 50% where there's all this fighting and in discord. You know, one child feels it should be this way, another child feels it should be this way, and sometimes they're fighting over the will, and it's just, we've seen these things in our counseling practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so if siblings could come together in a peaceful way, say years before their parent even goes into the dying process, and just start talking among themselves.
Yeah, because I think one of the biggest difficulties in that whole scenario is denial. You talked about DOD. It's like
right.
denial of who I am, who you are, who you're allowed to be, who gets...
Right.
It's not just about the will. It's who gets mom's love, who gets dad's love,
right,
who's
exactly.
the most important. Yeah.
Exactly.
So
but can you imagine having a special meeting,
mm-hmm.
just like siblings with a parent who's even getting older?
Mm-hmm.
And hearing the wishes of that parent, you know, being able to really hear clearly what your mom or dad wants for the end of their life, and I mean, how wonderful to have a discussion. That's a start.
And you have you done that with your kids? Well, it seems like your kids have been jump started in a way.
Yes,
I think our kids, yeah.
So we've been talking all along, and of course, in the process of taking care of Louise, you know, we would say, well, you know, yes, that's a great thing for me.
Well, it's just interesting because I realize, and you must know this as well as I do, that there's a lot of people that are not available for that kind of discussion. You know,
I know. It's sad, isn't it?
It's about our relationship to probably our conventions as well, isn't it?
Yeah. But again, denial of death.
Yeah, that's it.
It's the big one. So if we could just, you know, I mean, there's people don't talk about sex either.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, when we have our couples retreats, it's so important to talk about that.
Right.
I'm thinking even in a couples retreat, it would be wonderful to talk about dying, too.
Well, set those retreats up. I know you've got a plethora of them going on already that are about relationship and love, eh?
Yes.
And I just want to say one final thing before we want your contact information and so on, is I read in your relationship material that pretty much every relationship could work itself out rather than just give up on itself. Is that right?
Mm.
That's true.
But you see, what it takes is the willingness of each person to take responsibility for their own stuff, what they have to work through themselves, instead of blaming the other.
That's right.
And if two people are willing to really work on themselves and have a deeper relationship with themselves and actually learn to love themselves, then, yes, there's no such thing as... a problem that can't be worked through.
Well, that is a very inspiring way to complete our talk. And Louise herself chose her attitude, didn't she? She chose her approach to these things and kept
yes.
herself
yes.
clearing, didn't she? Or kept herself simple. Maybe that's a good way to put it. I thank you so much. How do people get hold of you again? I know you gave your website earlier, but they might have forgotten.
So that's probably the best way. So it's Barry and Joyce Vissell and Shared Heart, SHARED HEART, sharedheart.org is our website. And there's lots of many, many articles for relationship, personal growth, living from the heart, and now dying consciously.
I love that. And the name of the book again is
A Mother's final gift, how one woman's courageous dying transformed her family.
A wonderful story. And they can get it on Amazon or on your website?
Yes.
Well, thank you both so much. It's been very inspiring to just to read the book, let alone talk to you about it and go further. I'm hoping that you're going to be giving more and more talks on this subject.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Many blessings and good night, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.